Live from the Business Radio X studio inside Renaissance Bank, the bank that specializes in understanding you. It's time for North Fulton Business Radio.
And hello again, everyone. Welcome to another edition of North Fulton Business Radio. I'm John Ray, and folks, we are broadcasting, as usual, from inside Renaissance Bank in beautiful Alpharetta. And, you know, folks, banks are big these days, right? We're the land of the mega bank here in the United States. And if you're tired of that mega bank experience and you would like a bank that's, you need a bank that's big enough to handle your needs as a business, but you want some personal service. You want to actually know the people you're working with. Renaissance, I think, is that magic combination. At least that's what I hear from the clients that I refer to them. So go to renaissancebank.com and find one of their local offices and give them a call. And guess what? A live person answers the phone. It's amazing. Renaissance Bank, understanding you, member FDIC. And now I want to welcome Thomas Storteboom. Thomas is with I2E Solutions, and actually I'm welcoming Thomas back. So thanks for coming back.
John, it's a pleasure to be here. Yeah. And great place here at Renaissance Bank. Very friendly. I think four people said hello, and I personally got walked to the bathroom.
There you go.
Just a great experience today.
There you go. Yeah, they're here to serve. That's what they do. Yeah, it's great to have you back, because actually I remember your interview well, because it was so much fun to talk about innovation.
Yes.
And that's what you do. So let's, for those that did not hear that interview or just getting introduced to you, tell them how you serve folks.
Yeah, thanks, John. And again, thanks for having me. Absolutely. I've been looking forward to today for a while.
Me too.
But yeah. Hello, everybody. Thomas Storteboom, innovation consultant. I love to help companies find better ideas and bring them to life, and just to help them grow by doing new things. So what does that look like? It could be innovation strategy. It could be looking at ideas in your portfolio, helping you pick better ideas, just helping you with the whole strategy around innovation. Also, I do some innovation training, innovation brainstorming, and just anything related to helping small to medium-sized manufacturing companies find better ideas for their customers and delight their customers with new ideas. That's what I'm all about.
Yeah.
Single focus.
Yeah, I love it. It strikes me, we were talking a little bit about this before we came on the air, but we didn't mention it in exactly these terms. When you say you're an innovation consultant, I could imagine there's some folks out there that think that's a contradiction in terms, because they think ideas are just supposed to flow naturally out of their head, and they know their business, and they don't expect somebody else to be able to come in and help extract those new ideas.
Yeah.
That's what I mean by that.
Yeah. So let's unpack that, because there's a lot in what you just said. Okay. First off, innovation is not random. If you don't have a plan to find your next idea, good luck.
Oh, come on. I thought it was like suddenly the light comes on and the clouds part. Yeah. And
you can play that game, and then you can wonder why you're struggling to grow or struggling to launch new ideas. Right. Or you can plan and come up with a process. And there are ways to structure and find good ideas that you can bring to life. So that's one of the things I help companies do, is take it from random. Because you put together a growth plan or a growth strategy, if the foundation of that is randomness, good luck achieving it. So that's one of the things I like to help companies do, is let's move away from the random innovation to understanding and being able to plan and develop plans around it and understand where our shortfalls are and where we need to invest our time and energy so that it's not random.
I want to get more into that shortly, but you make a distinction between disruptive innovation and incremental innovation. Let's define those terms and why understanding the difference is so important.
Yeah. So disruption innovation is, there's some standard industry definitions around it, and I'm not going to try to defend, or there's a lot of, you can argue what is disruptive and what isn't, but we can say there are some major things that are disruptive in the marketplace. And those things tend to get all of the press and PR and the excitement around them, right? The new iPhone, the iPhone 1, when it came out, disruption changed the industry, right? It's a really big deal. I don't disagree with that. People want to focus on the disruptive innovation and not so much the incremental innovation. And the incremental innovation, I'm starting to say, is where there's a ton of money to be made. So if we think about it, the iPhone 1 was disruptive once. They've done 15 of them incrementally. Mm-hmm. Every time the new one comes out, people make fun of it because it really isn't that innovative. It's just a slight shift forward.
Right.
But they still sell millions of them.
Sure.
And if you look at the original disruption, there are plenty of copycats at this point that are like Google and Samsung. Everybody's making an iPhone copycat and making a ton of money off of it. So you don't always have to be the one to come up with the disruption. It's
right.
not a bad place to be.
Right.
But copying or being a fast follower, there's a ton of money. And if you look at history, one of my favorites is the car.
Right.
We went from the horse and buggy to a gas-powered automobile once.
Mm-hmm.
And that was truly disruptive. It came in low price for the masses. And it changed the game, right? We're still driving a four-wheeled gas-powered car, right? That's 90% of what's on the road.
That's right.
It's been 100 and some years, and it's got to be trillions of dollars have been made in the auto industry, incrementally innovating from the original. Would I want the original? No, the incremental's made it better, but it hasn't really been disrupted again. We can argue whether Tesla is or isn't disruptive to the industry, but if you just look at the 100-year history, there's all kinds of money being made in incremental innovation. So that's the distinction I like to make, if that helps.
Yeah, and it's the amount of money that's made over time. So it's not the one-time splash that may or may not be a splash.
Right. Correct.
Right. Yep. You think it's going to be a splash, but it may or may not be. But assuming it is, then the question is, like, building that into some sort of, I don't know if annuity is the right word, but some sort of long-term source of cash flow for the business.
Yes, yes. And the customer wants new, right? The customers want new. So updating and bringing new technology or new innovations into the core product is always good, right? It gives people reason to buy new, or it gives people a reason to buy yours over a competitor's. But those incremental innovations are worth a ton of money.
So are you saying that people spend too much time on the disruptive innovation piece and not on the incremental?
No, I'm saying disruptive gets too much focus.
Ah.
And if you're a business and you're only looking for disruptive, then I'd say you're missing a whole lot of revenue opportunity. And then I would also say you need a plan to do both. And you have to manage both differently. And if you don't understand that you need to manage them differently, the disruptive innovation will fail because it needs to be handled completely differently than an incremental innovation.
Thomas Stordeboom is our guest today, folks. He is the founder and CEO of I2E Solutions. Let's shift gears for just a second because I want to talk a little bit about your background and why innovation? Why did this come on as you developed your expertise over time, your career over time, how did innovation become your core joy when it comes to the work you do?
Yeah. So I've got a career in multi-billion-dollar global industries, Ford Motor Company. And then I spent a decade in a supply chain company called CHEP, which is $6 or $7 billion globally. Mm-hmm. And I just started this career path where people got new projects or new things to do. They didn't know what to do with them and they gave them to me to sort them out. Mm-hmm. So I always got the weird project that was a one-off that nobody knew what to do with because it was new and nobody had any expertise in it. And then eventually at CHEP, I became the director of innovation for the Americas and really focused on getting ideas out of the business, bringing those ideas to life, and then changing the culture at the same time. So it just became who I was and what I did. And I just fell in love with it from that.
Yeah.
Helping people think of new ideas and then helping them bring their ideas to life just became a lot of fun.
That's cool. So you've had experience with these major players that have worldwide operations. You're now working with small and medium sized businesses that they don't have the resources and the knowledge base and the human capital to throw at some of the kinds of issues and products they'd like to innovate, right? So talk about some of the specific problems that small and medium-sized businesses have around innovation.
Yeah, and first let me just address, I got a lot of experience in big companies, but if you scale that down, the small to medium-sized manufacturers need the same expertise.
Sure.
Right? Just at a smaller scale, right? So it's all about finding a solution that fits the size of the company that I'm working with. It's not a, let's take a multi-billion dollar solution and apply it to a small company, because that doesn't work. But to your point, they don't have the human capital or resources to do some of that. So it's, how can we innovate on a small scale? I like to say, invest a little to learn a lot. So how can a smaller company invest a little bit, learn a lot about an idea, and then move it forward? And then you had a second question on the end.
I guess the particular issues that small and medium-sized businesses have because of their size when it comes to fostering innovation in their enterprise.
Yeah. So I got a few of those. Let's start with ideas. So if you're a small, medium-sized enterprise, you're going to struggle with the ideas. You either have too many, you don't have enough, you don't know where the next idea is coming from. And we've already talked about innovation is not random, so let's not play that game. So what do you do? How do you find the next idea? How do you evaluate the next idea? And that's where I come in, is I can help companies put together a pipeline of ideas to evaluate, whether it's the, hey, let's start with innovation training, get your team thinking right, let's do some brainstorming, let's fill a pipeline, and then let's talk about how do we evaluate and learn about them. So that's one area. Companies is just, where do the ideas come from? Mm-hmm. Another is some companies have a ton of ideas and they don't know which ones to pick. And this is where I find people don't like to say no, which is very interesting to me. It's become very apparent, because no, what I'm finding is it's not about the idea, it's about the person behind the idea.
Interesting.
And somebody's come up with an idea in the company, and now that idea is their idea, but nobody wants to tell them it's a bad idea. Mm-hmm. So the idea just gets legs and moves on and moves on. Mm. And I've actually been in companies where they don't say no to ideas. And if you line up their product revenue, it looks like a hockey stick. 90% of what they're doing is not making them any money. It's the final 10% that's making all the money.
Right.
All the other stuff is just stuff they wouldn't say no to. Mm-hmm. So part of when it comes to ideas, I like to help people say no. Mm-hmm. Like, how do we determine what to say no to, which is really interesting. And it comes back to, we got to tie it back to your growth strategy, your product plan, who your customers are, where you want to go. You need to be able to say no, and you need to have a reason to say no. So if I can tie that it's a bad idea back to the growth strategy or back to the product plan, it's no longer a personal no. The growth strategy says this is a bad idea because it doesn't fit with who we are. So thanks for coming up with a great idea, but we're not going to invest in it because it's not moving the company the direction we want to go. So that feels a whole lot better than just saying, hey, John, your idea sucked.
Right. Yeah. I feel a lot better, Thomas.
It helps people. So helping people say no is an important thing in innovation.
Yeah. I love this. And is it because in the small and medium sized business, the person that came up with the idea is typically the boss?
Sometimes.
Okay.
And those pet projects never die.
Right. They sprout legs that stay.
Well, and then we invest all kinds of money that should never have been invested in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they're the owner, they're the boss, they know best.
Yeah. Or one customer said, hey, this would be a great idea, go do it for me.
All right.
And then that's not real feasible. That's not what we're trying to do here. But we have a voice that keeps chirping, right? Squeaky wheel gets the grease. So let's do this for them. And maybe that's the right strategy, but maybe it's not. But you need to be able to say no.
But what you provide, though, is more than just being the outside objective voice that can look at this and say no. That you provide more than that, although you provide a great way to say no, and I love that. It seems to me what you're bringing into a company like that is the structure around the process, right?
Yeah, and I don't say no. I'm never going to tell you your idea is bad. You need to determine for yourself if your idea is bad. Because if I come into a business, I don't have all the expertise and knowledge about your customers, your market, the competitive forces in the world that are affecting your business. If you want to pay me to figure all that out, we can do that. But it's much faster if we work together and we determine what the rules of a good project or a bad project are, and you determine whether or not it's a yes or a no, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense.
Because
you're the innovation Sherpa that's leading the
about Sherpa. Well, got a bad back.
Okay, y'all, leading the expedition, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I get it.
Yeah. So I'm going to come and help. What I like to do is unlock the knowledge in the company and use it to make innovation smoother, faster, and accelerated. Mm-hmm. Right. For me to come in and be the idea guy is a terrible idea. Even when I was working in corporate and I was the head of innovation, I always told everybody, the last thing you want is me sitting in a dark room coming up with an idea. Because it's pretty ignorant to think I've got all the good ideas, which I don't. There's much better ideas and people who are much closer to the problem we're trying to solve. And those are the ones we should be getting the ideas from. Mm.
Now, one of the things that you do, and we touched on it earlier, is innovation brainstorming. And I would love for you to share about what that looks like. And maybe before we get into that, why that's effective.
Okay. So,
because this is not what people are expecting. I think a lot of business owners are expecting in terms of how new ideas come. I would doubt that brainstorming is the word that comes maybe flying into their heads when they think about how to create innovation.
Yeah. So if we talk about, let's go back to innovation is not random.
Right.
We can plan for innovation. So the point of brainstorming is let's plan out. It's not random brainstorming. It's very focused. Before I'll ever do a brainstorming event, I'm going to work with somebody and determine what customer issue or problem or product are we trying to change, solve, or innovate on. Mm-hmm. It's very specific so that it suits a need in the business, whether it's a hole in the product plan or a gap in the growth strategy. Right? So it's all very targeted brainstorming. We have a area we want ideas for, and we target it at that. Okay. So first off, it's very targeted. The second is what we just talked about is I'm not the ideas guy. I can help unlock ideas from people who are closer to the subject material than I am.
Right.
So let's leverage that. So how do we leverage your team to come up with ideas to solve customer problems or come up with new widgets? That's where I come in. And so the brainstorming is all about empowering people to think a little bit differently, showing them how to do it, and then helping them and guiding them through a process to approach a challenge from a different direction than they have historically, and then to come up with new ideas around that, right? And so that's where it fits in. It fits in with the, we have a problem to solve. How do we plan to solve it? And then how do we plan to come up with ideas that can help us solve that challenge or problem or meet that customer need?
And who needs to be in the room for that? When you gather a group together, who needs to be in the room?
So it's usually, depending on the group, it's 8 to 10 people max. You want to keep it small. I like cross-functional. It needs to be a group of cross-functional people. It needs to be people who are, let's call them agreeable, right? We've all got the people in the business that say no to everything. So,
right.
So we try to avoid those in a brainstorming session because in a brainstorming, we really do want people to have some freedom to think differently. But the biggest thing for me is it's got to be a cross-functional group of people that have the knowledge and understanding of what's going on or the problem we're trying to solve or the product and the customer and the market. But it has to be cross-functional. I won't do one if it's not cross-functional. Because it's a solution for one segment of the business. And we need solutions that span the business to be successful, right?
Yeah, because at the end of the day, when you come up with all these different ideas,
yeah,
you've got to do some sort of ranking, testing to figure out like what floats and what doesn't.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I'm an engineer, so I can say this, or at least I was trained as an engineer. If you are letting the engineers run your innovation pipeline, you are struggling because engineers are not outwardly focused. They're inwardly focused typically. Mm-hmm. And so they will come up with ideas that are cool to work on.
Yeah.
But might not be able to build them. The customer and I might not want them. So there's a lot of times I see companies fail because they're letting one organization run the innovation pipeline. And it's not tied to the growth strategy. It's not tied to the customer. It's not tied to the operations. It's just, hey, this is a cool thing. I'm going to go do it. Cool things don't necessarily meet your market segment or your customer's needs, right?
And this is where, to me, I would think, I'm asking the question, I would think that this is where small and medium-sized manufacturers have an advantage over the bigger players in their industry because they don't have the same kind of silos or they shouldn't have, let's put it like that. I'm sure some of them do, but they don't have, the silos have not hardened, don't have the hardened walls that the big companies have. Is that a fair statement?
No, actually, I would challenge that.
And say, really?
Yeah. Because even in people work on what they're incentivized to do. Mm-hmm. So if you're running operations and you're incentivized to keep costs down and to increase throughput, that's all you care about.
Yeah.
And that translates to any size business, right? Mm-hmm. You're paying me to do widgets faster and cheaper.
Yeah.
Don't bother me with anything else.
Yeah.
And so you get that silo approach anywhere. And then part of the struggle, even if it's a small company, is if they have an innovation group or a product development or engineering group, it's a small group. And mm-hmm. so they just give all of it to that group. And that group can become very internal focused.
Yeah.
And they're not, even though it's a small company and the head of operations is two doors down, mm-hmm. they're all focused on doing their own thing. So it's a struggle that I see in any size business.
And so let's talk about what happens when you come in to one of these engagements, Thomas, how you facilitate a great brainstorming session.
Sure. So great brainstorming is a lot about prepping. So there's a lot of prep work that goes on with myself and whoever the sponsor for the session is. We got to have the right idea, the right challenge, the right people in the room. We got to understand what the right outcomes, what's the goal of the brainstorming. Then it's getting the right people in the room. And then it's part training and empowering so that they feel willing and open to share an idea, right? Because a lot of times people have been told no so many times, or we can't do that, or it's too expensive, or we've tried it before, we do it this way, right? That they don't really feel free to come up with a new idea. Mm-hmm. So part of it's just getting people to the point where they feel comfortable sharing in a room, right? And then the other part is helping them look at a challenge differently so they can come up with a new idea. So that's brainstorming. You asked an engagement. An engagement for me with a client is typically somebody struggling with something, whether it's to launch new ideas, to come up with new ideas, or the engineering department, you know, is not, when they hand a project handoffs between engineering or ops are a struggle. There's some sort of key issue that they are feeling and sensing in their process that they're not sure how to fix. Mm. And so I come in and I do some data gathering, some investigative research to see what's going on. And then we typically work together to find a couple areas that we should target first. What's the high priority areas of what's the challenge? Is it the culture? Is it the process? Is it the ideas in the pipeline? Is it, we just haven't tied anything together? Is it not cross-functional? Those kinds of things.
So are your engagements typically, you're teaching a client how to change their process around innovation, and then that lasts for some period of time, and then you're launching them off into the world? Or do you have longer term engagements where you're staying involved, or both?
It's both.
Okay.
It's both. And some of it's even part-time innovation help, right? Mm. Like we don't have the resource. We need some resource. Mm-hmm. Can you come be an innovation expert for us? But then, yeah, some of it's, hey, we got a mess here. Let's pick one thing and we're going to work on a few things with some clients. And then some clients are like, no, I just want to fix this, and we can just fix that and move on. So it's a little bit, I tend to be pretty flexible to work with. Mm-hmm. I just like helping people. So if people are struggling with innovation, let's do it better, because it really is a lot of fun and it should be a lot of fun. And if you're frustrated by it, then something's wrong.
Yeah. So you said you like to work with small and medium-sized manufacturing companies. Any further specificity around that when it comes to geography or type of company, maybe a sector they're in or anything?
No, just that's my playground.
Okay.
Those are my people.
Those are your people.
Yeah. And I've worked, honestly, John, probably over half of my business has been outside of Atlanta.
Okay.
So I work with Zoom these days. And
yep.
Atlanta, quick flights. You can be anywhere and do things pretty quickly. Now I'm happy to work with, it's mainly people that are manufacturing products or services, because that's the world I came from. That's the world I understand.
And yep.
The problems are all very similar. The things that change are the customer knowledge, the market, that kind of stuff. But the client's bringing that to the table anyway. For me, it just becomes simple to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, for sure. You are done this for quite a while, and I can imagine that you've got quite a few success stories. I think it'd be great if you could maybe share one or two that help illustrate the great work you do.
Yeah, I had one client when I joined them, they were definitely struggling to say no. So they had two product managers. They're trying to manage 40 different innovation projects at the same time, cross-functionally. They were doing it cross-functionally well, but everybody was overworked and nothing was moving forward. So we actually had a yes-no event. got them together and we had to have a yes-no event to just get that number down to something reasonable.
Yeah.
So we worked with everybody to set what the benchmark level should be and how many can we actually handle and move, right? And then we had a whole yes-no event, which was fantastic. Cross-functional team, got everybody in, everybody got to vote, everybody got to decide and discuss. So yeah, a lot of fun there, taking stress off people. Yeah, and then other ones, just helping people see the opportunity in front of them that the idea holds. So a lot of times we have an idea, we're not really sure what that idea could be. And so I've done some work with some clients that had ideas and just helping them put the business model and the business case around that idea so that they can make an informed decision on the yes, no is always a joy too.
Yeah.
Just helping people say, hey, this, if you're looking for something that's a $30 million idea, this is a $2 million idea. Probably can just move on. Mm-hmm. I know you love it, but we can move on.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You're giving people, in a lot of cases, they know what the right answer is already. You're giving them the freedom and the permission, maybe is the word, to act on what they already know in their gut.
John, I'm not the smartest guy in the room. I just get to see it from a different perspective. If I can get you there and we can use your expertise, then let's go.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. Thomas Storteboom, folks, he is founder CEO of I2E Solutions. I expected a great conversation. I wasn't disappointed. Thank you for coming in. I appreciate you. But we've got to get to the most important question, which is if folks have heard something here that makes them want to be in touch with you, tell them how they can do that.
Yeah, John, I love it. And thanks so much for having me. It's always a pleasure, and I don't know why we wait every 2 years to do this.
I don't either.
All right, so I can be reached on various places. LinkedIn is great, Thomas Storteboom. I have a website, www.i2e.solutions. You can hit me up at my work email, thomas@i2e.solutions, or just give me a call, 470-206-5650.
Thomas Storteboom with I2E Solutions. Thomas, thanks again.
Thanks, John. Loved it.
Hey, folks, just a couple of quick things before we let you go for today. If you're in the North Fulton area and listening to this show prior to April 28th, 2024, you need to know about the Casanova Block Party that is happening on Sunday, April 28th from 2 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. Casanova is one of the premier Italian restaurants in the North Fulton region. It's on Highway 9, just north of McFarland, and they are having a block party to raise money for Purple Pansies, an organization dedicated to raising funds for pancreatic cancer research and to provide help to families that are battling that disease. They've got complimentary food, music, fun for the whole family. It's going to be a terrific event, and it's their way to say thank you to their amazing community that they love to serve and raise money for Purple Pansies at the same time for those that would like to make donations. Rain or shine, join them there. To find out more, dial 770-475-9100 or go to CasanovaRestaurant.com. Also, I just want to let you know that I have a book out. It's called The Generosity Mindset, A Journey to Business Success by Raising Your Confidence, Value, and Prices. If you're a solo or small professional services provider and you've got issues around diagnosing and communicating the value that you offer to clients, your confidence in that value, or pricing your services, this book may be for you. To learn more and to find out where to buy the book, which is pretty much anywhere, go to thegenerositymindset.com. And finally, I want to thank you, our listener. We're coming up on 8 years of North Fulton Business Radio, and we've passed show number 750 quite some time ago, and we've only come this far because of you. thank you for your support. You support us in innumerable ways by the comments that you send us and the notes you send us. You like us on social media. You share the show with others. And we just appreciate how much you support our mission to be the voice of business and the voice of the community here in the North Fulton region. Thank you for that support. So for my guest, Thomas Storteboom, I'm John Ray. Join us next time here on North Fulton Business Radio.